I would like to invite our speakers for the AMA, so I'm gonna invite one by one, and everyone will say hi to you, Deshaun, and after I have everyone here, then I'll let you go. So let's start by inviting Kirk Pepperdine, who helped organize this conference. Hello, Kirk.
Hey, Bruno, how are you doing? Hi, Deshaun.
Hello, hello.
And we'll see.
All right. So to everyone watching, Kirk helped us put this conference together. He invited his friends from the Java community who were very happy to participate. Kirk has been helping me behind the scenes a lot over our chat here. Hey, here's what's going on. Here's like how much time we have left and all that sort of things with the production team as well. And Kirk, you're going to stay here for our AMA. So let's jump to our next guest. Let's go with George Adams, the gorgeous British person, George Adams.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, kind sir.
All right, so we got George here. George, did you like Deshaun's presentation? Was it cool? Azure Spring Cloud and all that good stuff?
I must admit, I only caught the last 15 minutes, so I need to do my homework and watch it. But it's really awesome you put it all into a GitHub org so that any of us can just go and play with that. It looks like you've been doing some really cool work there, so thanks.
Absolutely. All right. So it's interesting that... for folks that also could only jump in the last 15 minutes, don't worry. Deshaun's presentation will be available on YouTube for on demand, so you can watch later. Yeah, or Deshaun, you can watch your session later if you want. It's up to you.
My mom and dad are going to be looking for it.
Your mom and dad. Mom and dad. The more viewers we have on YouTube, the better. All right, our next guest, Bernard from the OpenJDK on ARM. Bernard, hey, welcome.
How's it going?
Well, you're all good, man. Can I run Spring Boot applications now on Windows on ARM? Is that right?
Yes, you can. It's amazing.
All right.
We just tried it out on Tuesday for the demo, and it actually worked. We were quite surprised, to be honest. Yeah.
All right.
It was actually the very first time for me that I was running Spring Boot. So it was amazing.
Oh, sweet. Yes. You did a Java minus jar and everything worked nicely.
Yeah, it was like Maven, awesome. Spring something.
Amazing. So let's bring her, the lady, the amazing Monica. Where are you, Monica? Hello, hello. Hey, I see you kept your background. That's nice. let's shine this conference.
That's exactly.
Welcome. Our next guest for the AMA will be Charlie. Where are you, Charlie?
Hey guys.
All right. Charlie, you presented at FOSDEM earlier this year. You talked about stack allocation. Can I stack allocate my Spring Boot apps? Is that how it works?
You could Spring Boot parts of it. Stack allocate parts of it, I think. But we'll see. That's still a work in progress feature. So we'll see how things turn out in the long term.
Okay, awesome. And I think we are missing one person or two. Let's go with Martin. Are you there, Martin?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. How are you going?
We are all good. Welcome to the show. Everybody can say hi to Martin at the same time, so we see hands all at the same time instead
great
of
great presentation, Deshaun, by the way.
Thank you.
All right. And finally, our last guest, our surprise, we have somebody breaking into JDConf. Is the person's name is Scott Hunter.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We have a C# .NET person here. What's happening?
I was a Java person before I was a C# person.
Where are we all?
That's right. We'll get you back to the side of light, Scott, don't you worry.
All right, so for folks who don't know, Scott Hunter is the PM director for .NET and also now Java here at Microsoft, where I'm work at. Myself and George work with Scott. Java and .NET have so many similarities. Some people actually ask, Is Microsoft going to run C-sharp on Java? Is Microsoft going to run Java on C-sharp? It's not what we are doing. No, folks, those are great technologies for their own ecosystems and communities, and we're going to support them all. In fact, Sean, I don't know if you heard, but you can now run .NET applications on Azure Spring Cloud. Have you heard about that?
I absolutely have. My good friend, Robert Suchia, here, as soon as I heard, I was like, hey, Robert, like, this is, it brings me joy. We like doing that kind of back and forth between the .NET and the Java and the Spring. And it's, yeah, it's been fun. So yeah, I am excited about it. I'm a big Steel Toe fan.
And just to, you know, you're, so Scott, you just jump in here, like Deshaun, he's working for Redis Labs for 11 days and he already has a t-shirt.
11 days.
He has a t-shirt, a background wallpaper on his laptop, a water bottle, and his headphone matches the logo. All that in 11 days.
Such an
amazing. All in. Well done, man. All right, I'll let you go, Deshaun, but before you go.
I got a question. I'm here. I want to get my question in.
Yes. Please bring it on.
I got a survey, and the survey got me a little excited. It was the Java survey. I think it was associated with the registrations. And some of the questions on the survey really piqued my interest. I've got, maybe this is like a guess of what's coming down the pipe with Microsoft, and two questions, Cloud Gateway and Spring Cloud Dataflow. What can you tell me? Because I'm excited, goosebumps.
That's a very, very powerful, strong question. I've got to say, I have to think about an answer before I give it to you. So without knowing that many details of the survey that you saw, I will say that the survey's intention is really to find out users' interest in those technologies so we can find out what else to develop on our roadmap for our services and products, right? So Cloud Gateway has support for any kind of workload, but if we can make the integration easier, especially for Java apps and Azure Spring Cloud, the better. So we are trying
to find developers.
Or .NET apps, right? You're running on Azure Spring Cloud? Yeah, absolutely. So we are trying to find out the interest so we can prioritize our roadmap. That's what the survey is about, and getting feedback on what people want and when they want. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. So if I send the survey in 10 times, is it going to count 10 times? Just curious.
We have a good tool that can filter duplicates. It's called Microsoft Excel. We put everything on Excel and just filter the duplicates. It's easy. Perfect. So it will probably just count as one. So I'll let you go. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Appreciate the content, appreciate the session. And I look forward to see more stuff from Redis Labs working with Microsoft and Java community and the .NET community. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So I guess we have a nice AMA here, and I cannot start in a different way other than asking Scott a question that he got on Twitter. And Scott, you gave an excellent answer. I'm looking at a tweet here. Where is it now?
I can tell you what the tweet
is. Yeah. So what Java thing that you would like to come in .NET, and how this Java team can help the .NET team bring that to life?
Yeah, so the on that question, the biggest thing that comes to mind to me was, what Java feature would we want to bring to .NET? And .NET has always tried to be kind of like automatic, which means no matter if you're running a IoT workload that uses very little CPU, or you're running some huge application that uses, has millions of users on the web hitting it, we try to just naturally make our garbage collector in tech just dynamically adjust to whatever you're doing. And I was talking to part of my team one day. We were running some gRPC benchmarks, and the .NET tech was just below Rust. And then I heard that, and Java wasn't doing well in this benchmark. And then I heard that Bruno popped in and took the Java number and made it be the best number. And he did that by turning a bunch of dials on Java. And so to me, I would love to bring the best of the dials that exist in Java to .NET so our customers can better tune .NET to the particular workload that they're using. And I happen to know from some of my friends that work at other companies like Amazon and stuff that they use Java in many of their in many places where they are tuning Java explicitly for particular workloads, whether it's changing the garbage collector, changing the memory footprints and the way it deals with memory. And so I think that's an example of, you know, feedback you could give the .NET team to help them, you know, have a better product in the future.
So I when I was playing with those knobs and tweaking the JVM, all I could think of, I have no experience with this thing and I'm just throwing these parameters to the JVM and hoping for the best. So I would love to hear from Monica. She's laughing hard. And Karik, you have some experience with that, I guess. What do you guys think about how, you know, tuning the JVM? How does that work? Let's hear a little bit from Monica.
Oh, it's black magic. No, I mean, the JVM offers so many logs that you can look at, and it's easier to let the log speak to you. So I don't really need to know your application. If I can see the GC log over a period of time, I can detect the patterns, and I can understand if there are any pain points that are visible with respect to the GC, for example, I can understand that. And then I can ask you to enable a further logs so that I can look at those, and then eventually we'll get to the bottom of it. Your system has lots of information that it can provide as well, so we can get other stats from the system itself all the way down to the hardware and the various these are called hardware counters, and Kirk can definitely help us more here because that's what Illuminate that's where Illuminate actually shines. So over to you, Kirk.
Oh, right. I think you just about said it all. I don't know if there's much else to add to that except for I thought we were trying to get the JVM more auto-tunable so you didn't have to play as much with the knobs. So I think we're looking towards .NET for that help.
Well, I think when you talk about logs and data that JVM produces, folks ask what differentiates the Java runtime against other runtimes. And as Scott said, these are some of the things that the JVM has that he would love to see on .NET. When we see the recent advancements in the JVM, we hear about Java Flight Recorder and event streaming. I think that's an interesting topic. I'd like to hear more about that. Let's go with Martin. What do you know about JFR events?
Yeah, so JDK Flight Recorder or Java Flight Recorder, as folks may have heard about it, yeah, it used to be a commercial technology that was only shipped with Oracle's Java. They very kindly donated it to the Open JDK project, which is the open source project behind Java itself. And recently, with a little bit of nudging from ourselves and a whole bunch of other vendors, we managed to get that into Java 8 as well. So it's an inbuilt telemetry system for the JVM, which is actually in there under the hood. You don't need to attach anything special to go get this telemetry data. You just switch Flight Recorder on. It can do so in a low impact manner, and emits all sorts of events that you can request from it. What the CPU is doing, what your threads are doing, what the objects are doing, what the garbage collector is doing. And today there's a rich client called Java Mission Control that you can use to read all that information. And when you have experts like everyone on the Sing, Charlie and Monica and Kirk, for example, they can read that information very quickly, get to the bottom, to the answer. So one of the things we're looking at here at Microsoft is how we can bring that capability to cloud scale, right? And so that's something we're looking at very closely here internally with our tooling group.
And speaking of cloud scale, Microsoft is investing in ARM-based chipsets. And when you talk about data centers, we talk about energy consumption, and if there's any way that we can overnight just flip to ARM and spend less with energy, I think that should be like easy, right, Monica? That should be easy, no? Take all the servers?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a great term that, I we use a lot at Microsoft. It's called COGS, right? Cost of goods sold. And if you attended my talk yesterday, I gave an overview of where ARM started with respect to 64-bit and where it's today. And there are so many, it's moving towards, we know of ARM as a weaker model. So people are kind of thinking about, oh, there may be synchronization overheads, but ARM is improving on all those. And I talked about ThunderX2 with 256 hardware threads. Oh my gosh, that's mind-boggling. So, and Bernard, do you want to? I know you're smiling because we were part of enabling Java JVM to scale across these threads. And oh wow, I mean, the first time we saw all the cores fired and the hardware threads fired, we were like excited. We were celebrating. Virtual cheers to everybody. Do you want to add something, Bernard?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working with ARM 64 devices since 4 years already, but I started with, you know, mobile phones, which are okay performance-wise. But when I joined this team, I had access to a TX2 with like 128 cores. It's amazing. Like, if you can build the JVM faster on the target machine than on your dev machine, it's amazing. It just takes like 2 minutes to build OpenJDK.
So if we can have all these capabilities and this power, I wonder, Charlie, how easy it is to add stack allocation support on ARM right into the chipset. Is that possible?
I don't think it would be super easy to add stack allocation to the chipset. I've had lots of colleagues in the past who worked on Java on the like actual Java silicon and stuff. Not so sure that's something we want to talk about doing ever again. I think everyone's left that in the past. I do think there is lots of opportunity for less objects to be allocated on the heap in Java in particular, but there's a whole multitude of ways that can be done, and I really don't want to go down to having a chip do it for us.
But
I mean, what could go wrong? You just patch the chip later after it's shipped, right?
But Bruno, your question was on the right path, though. If you talk about stack allocation, actually, the escape analysis in general, it's all about allocating on into registers, right? You don't allocate on heap. Have the processor registers directly access that the data, and ARM provides that benefit too. ARM has a lot more number of registers available, processor registers available. So yeah, right. It does. Your question made perfect sense until you said on the chip, and I was like, that's fun.
I love that. I turned like I don't know what I'm doing. Suddenly comes a nice question out. I'm like.
So I'd like to comment here because, I mean, we've been looking at all of the memory bandwidth issues and just about every application you can look at. And this is a chip level problem. So when you get it, it just kills the performance on everything evenly. So profilers don't even see it because it's just like an even sluggishness. You're stuck in the mud. And I don't know, like Monica, I don't really have experience with ARM yet. It's like, what's the memory bandwidth situation look like in that chipset?
That's an interesting question. So yeah, like Bernard mentioned, we like ThunderX2 has like 128 cores. So yeah, definitely memory bandwidth is a big consideration. There are some optimizations done. You know, it's all about the memory channels and the data widths of these channels. So there's a lot of optimizations done in the design of these chipsets. And I encourage people to use to get more information out on the interwebs because, you know, there's some details that maybe, you know, when we do experiments, we can figure that out as well. But I cannot share more right now, but there are definitely, as you scale, you want to be able to scale the memory channels and the width of those buffers also matter a lot internally. So it's not just ARM, it's also done for Intel, for example. Interconnects are really, really optimized to maximize the bandwidth.
And the interesting thing here is, you know, Microsoft is doing this work for Windows on ARM. I know, Scott, you and the .NET team, .NET runtime team, are also working on bringing the full capabilities of .NET into ARM. Is there anything you want to add about ARM from the .NET space, how you guys are doing that? Because I think it's interesting because the efforts from a runtime developer perspective are quite similar.
Yeah, when it comes to ARM and .NET, we've actually had ARM Linux support for a long time now, so for about 4 or 5 years. ARM Windows support comes with .NET 5, which ships in a week or so, 2 weeks. The big challenge for us is not the actual runtime. It's getting some of the bigger workloads that run on top of it. So in the case of the .NET world, we have things like WinForms and WPF, which are the visualization stacks. And so there's a lot more work to get one of those things to move over because those things have lots of native code inside of them as well. And so, you know, getting the runtime to go is not that hard. One of the differences for us now is we are trying to performance benchmark the ARM tech the same way we do the Intel and AMD tech. So that's an area that you'll see more effort on us in the future. And I was going to say there was something I was talking to Martine about during this last conversation of things that maybe Java could steal from .NET. We just added in the .NET 5 wave stack alloc as a way of allocating memory inside of a function that is on the stack. So you can actually decide, hey, I don't want to go actually get on the heap because that's going to require a GC at some point. And so there's now a way that you can micro-optimize and actually put some stuff on the local stack. Buffers or whatnot will just go away, obviously, when the function is.
That's an interesting topic. Charlie, you want to add something to that?
In the past, like I think for me, one of the things I investigated even probably before my Microsoft days was actually allowing people to, like, via an annotation. At the time, we didn't have value annotations in Java, which they're there now. And I think with that, if you were going to allow a good way for a user to hint for something to happen, now I know there's all kinds of downsides to allowing the user to hint, but when they do know that something isn't going to be used and they could direct to say, like, just go do this object on the stack, I think you could have some pretty big wins. And in some small, like, targeted workloads, like with prototypes in the past, I was able to see, like, ginormous wins, like never GC because I was handling a transaction or something, a request. And I know that those 15 things are never going to survive. So I said, stack allocate them. And it was, like, enormously faster and, like, no GC pressure. But those are the types of things that kind of have to feel out what the Java community wants in the future going forward and then build on that with other community members and see where we want to kind of take that type of tech to.
In the case of .NET, some of these, where they came out of was when we first started building the newer .NET, which is .NET Core, and started really caring about performance, we did a bunch of nasty code tricks to make some of this stuff go fast. And so we've literally been trying to go and erase all the unsafe code that we wrote and try to make it something supported by the actual tech itself. So our team doesn't have to build, you know, the tech's open source. So I don't even want you to see what we did in like 1.0 of .NET Core to make it go fast. We were doing, you know, there's a feature in C# called unsafe.
We have the same.
Oh, yeah, welcome.
So we literally tried to kill all unsafe that's why we've done it. And so it's actually been an output of us performance optimizing and taking the learnings from doing that from our own perf optimizations and trying to put it back to the tech.
Cool. That's really classic.
I've never seen a managed runtime not need a backdoor like unsafe. There's always something that you want to do that requires unsafe. And it doesn't matter. It was the same in Smalltalk, right? It just goes all the way back.
Smalltalk. Martin, you had something to say?
No, it's really funny that the Java also has the very infamous unsafe class, which is which is there derided and beloved in our ecosystem.
I just saw a JAP this week on the OpenJDK project. It's all about encapsulating all the internals of Java except unsafe and a few others. Like, Okay, you can close everything except unsafe.
The cat very much got out of the bag on that one for the Java ecosystem.
Exactly.
So,
And speaking of JAPS and OpenJDK, I think George, you've been working with Adopt OpenJDK and building a community along with Martin and others on the LJC. What are some of the interesting things that are happening in OpenJDK and how the community have been collaborating with OpenJDK through the, you know, since the flip, I guess, from 8 to 11 and when things actually happened for the community?
Yeah, thanks, Bruno. So there's been a few kind of really interesting observations we've seen at Adopt OpenJDK. One of the things we're really relieved to finally see from our download statistics is that day by day now, Java 11 is getting more downloads than 8, which I'd like to think we all think is a huge success. If we can get people migrating off 8, then I'd argue that's a win. One of the other really exciting things is Adopt OpenJDK was one of the real drivers in getting a macOS notarized build of OpenJDK into the ecosystem. And it was great to see a community kind of take on that ownership and actually get that resolved rather than relying on an individual company to get those sort of patches prepared. And it really did unlock the door. And fortunately, everybody's been able to take those patches and provide their own notarized build of Java so that Java can still run on macOS, which would be a disaster if it couldn't, of course. And then I guess the other really exciting thing is the move to the Eclipse Foundation. So we mentioned it in the keynote yesterday, but it's super exciting to see us move away from the humble LJC into a more enterprise-ready software foundation. Hopefully it will allow us to spend more time on developer outreach, get to more conferences, put more time into code and making things continue. And hopefully we'll sort of exceed the 200 million downloads we hit last week and continue to go until we run out of digits.
I was a little bit shocked when I heard the new name of Adopt OpenJDK under the Eclipse Foundation. Is it Eclipse Adoptium?
Yeah, it is. We describe it as marvelesque. unfortunately, a group of software developers are not very good at naming products, and unfortunately, that's what happened.
I was hoping that you guys would call it like Eclipse Sunrise or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, trademarks don't go down well. We tried all of those. yeah, there's an even more exciting name.
Yeah, we probably spent half a day coming up with names and another 5 weeks looking at the legal implications of all of those names. And trust me, it's not something you ever wanted to go through.
You just bike shed for a half a day on names? That's a record. ask Scott. Scott has some history with naming things at Microsoft.
Yeah, I've what I've learned is all names suck. you can never win, and I've spent over 6 months in some cases on this stuff, and I know products in Microsoft that have spent over a year, primarily because if you want to do like imagine your PowerPoint or something like that, well, you have to make sure that name is not only valid in the United States but in Russia and the UK. That's the challenge you have. Is in many cases, big companies like Microsoft actually go and pay off various countries so they can actually use the same name all the way around the world. And so luckily, none of us on this call work on things that are of that magnitude of like, you know, OS level or office level kind of stuff, because that's when the naming gets really, really hard to have a trademarkable name all the way around the world.
And there are some challenges as well when you name things and then they are translated to other languages and they don't mean what they should mean. It's like one of those challenges. Scott, I just want to pull you into one more thing. When was the last time you played with Java?
3 weeks ago.
Look at that. We're making headway, folks. We're making headway.
We are almost there. We're almost there. I hope it was a latest version of Java, not Java 1.5.
It was the latest version of Java, but I have Java on all my machines now. So I'm fully converted.
Awesome. We'll see if we've got any job openings for you there, Scott, just in case you want to come across.
PRs are welcome, Scott. PRs are welcome. As long the methods don't start with an uppercase letter, we are all good.
I do think there are things that both .NET and Java can learn both ways from each other, and I hope that some of the OpenJDK investments that we at Microsoft are going to do would make that open. I also want to be very careful. I don't want to cause any wars between I think it's a different era than it was way back in the last time, you know, Microsoft was in the Java space. But in the .NET world, we try to learn from everybody. And I assume Java tries to learn from everybody. And I think there are ways that we can learn from each other as part of this process.
Yeah, that's exactly how we feel. At least we as Java developers, when we look at C Sharp and we think, oh, this is a great language feature. When will Brian Goetz, hey, Brian, when are you going to bring that Java language, the C Sharp language feature into Java? You know, sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes they actually implement. So it's good to see that all languages are benefiting from each other. I think eventually, I don't know, in 250 years from now, we're going to have a single language to rule the world and they combine everything in a single thing.
And it'll be a visual programming language, Bruno.
I was going to add that JVMLS for a couple of years, actually, we have the .NET team come in and give talks about CLR. This was before I joined Microsoft. That's when I met the .NET team and we had dinner together and we were bonding over some, I guess that was value types back then or something. So a couple of years ago. And since then, we've been good friends. And again, this was before my time at Microsoft. So I was like, oh, wow. We have so much to learn from each other, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, that was, right. They were in at QCon in San Francisco.
I invited them.
That was a very interesting, they gave very interesting presentation about the guts, and we had a nice conversation afterwards because they were seeing pretty much the same problems we were in terms of how to manage memory and memory footprints. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and exactly, I was not surprised, but I was very happy actually because I was the organizer to see the AMA for .NET team to be such a the room was packed, yes, I mean that was something that was, living in my bubble of Java to see that I was like very 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 happy, yeah.
Very nice.
So I got a question for you all. The question is, how's life as a Java developer at Microsoft? That's a question I see a lot over of Twitter and Reddit. What is a Java engineering group? Let's start with that. What is a Java engineering group? Let's go with Martin. You lead the team. What is a Java engineering group?
That's a fantastic question. So interestingly, the Java engineering group doesn't actually have a lot of core Java engineers in it as such. Like everyone's more than capable of writing Java. We have in our tooling team in particular, they write Java every day. But we have a lot of VM engineers. So they actually spend a lot of their time in C++, C, and the beautiful language that is assembly. And so, when you do code reviews and things in our group, you're going to see assembly as much as you see anything else, apart from YAML, of course, which is Bruno's favorite language.
It's not me who's using Visual Studio as my ID. It's you guys.
So yeah, very quickly, so we obviously have VM engineering as a very strong cohort that we have in our group. We have performance analysis tooling, which Kirk pretty much heads. We have professional services, and of course, we have our wonderful program management folks, which Bruno and George, they name things for us, if nothing else. But perhaps, yeah, let's go around. I'd love to hear. Now I get to hear what the experience is really like.
Yeah, so let's go, Bernard, you... When you thought about joining Microsoft to work with Java for Java as a Java C++ engineer, how was that?
I'm with Microsoft for 4 years already, and I was in the .NET team before. but I cannot write C#, and I cannot write Java, so I cannot talk about anything like that. It's the wrong player for me.
As long as you can make the JVM run on ARM, I'm okay with it.
Exactly, and that's the exciting part for me. I believe ARM64 is the future, and I'm glad that Microsoft is willing to invest in that. And I'm glad that I'm part of that, and it's fun for me.
Awesome. Charlie, you've been a member of the Java community for a long time. I think you came from IBM, is that right?
I worked on J9 for basically my whole career until last year. So I've been at Microsoft for a year now. It's a completely different JVM, but it's all the same things. So it's great. I've been enjoying my time at Microsoft. It's another. I'm happy to see another large company get involved in the OpenJDK community and actually be putting investment into it, because I think that's very important. That's kind of like been always my view on OpenJDK from my early days at IBM. So I'm just happy to be part of that and happy to be part of Microsoft's effort into improving OpenJDK, because I think with the core team we've put together here, along with other groups that we can collaborate with, I think we can do some pretty good things.
Kirk, when you look at the when you look at the state of Java performance and contributions from multiple companies into OpenJDK, do you see a future where the more contributions we have, the more magic OpenJDK will do, and we will not have to add 200 parameters to start a JVM? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that's the hope, and there's some wonderful ideas coming from all kinds of different companies now that have sometimes competing concerns. So that's probably why you're never going to get away with getting rid of all of the flags. But it's really kind of exciting, especially being here, because we have access to just about any amount of data that we want to drown in. And I think, you know, for performance tuning, like, data is a key thing. And it's just that aspect of it is just absolutely wonderful. Just the opportunity to take some of our ideas about how we can make tooling smarter and just apply them across a wide range of workloads. Just the opportunity here is just pretty much non-existent in just about any other place. So it's just amazing.
And it's interesting, as we heard from Scott on the .NET, they tried to make the runtime as adaptive as possible, where the Java, the JVM runtime always, like, it started a lot with, you know, there are only knobs that you have to change, and except for the JIT compiler, of course, it will optimize over time. But for most of the settings, you have to provide those inputs. So it almost feels like we're now turning the JVM or helping build the JVM in a way that .NET runtime is kind of developed today with a more adaptive way. I don't know. I'm not the expert here, so that's why I'm going to throw it out to you. Monica, you have experience with that. Bernard, you also have experience with the .NET runtime. Do we see the JVM runtime following some of the ideas of .NET runtime, or the other way around?
So my background has always been OpenJDK, or SunJDK. So I wouldn't know much about the .NET runtime, except for recently we've been looking at managed runtime in general and trying to figure out workloads and patterns with respect to, data centers and usage and everything. So I was working with this internal team. We have a couple of interns, and we were doing these comparisons. So I'm not surprised, but I find similarities more between these managed runtimes than when you compare them with the static compilers and the spec ints, the benchmarks and everything. So benchmarks themselves have evolved a lot thanks to the managed runtime. So now we can see not just the VM range, but also for, prior to that, we always talk about, like, memory bandwidth, and we will talk about the responsiveness. But now benchmarks are evolving into different combinations and different improvements. Startup is also a great consideration. I think .NET has won, and we are catching up, and Java is catching up. I don't know, Bernard, your experience matters here, so maybe chime in, please.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea about garbage collectors, but on the JIT side, like, Java has always been more advanced in terms of tiered compilation, have, like, the interpreter, multiple compilers on top of it, and so forth. And since 2 years, I think, there are some efforts now in .NET Core to bring that also over into the .NET world. So they added tiered compilation, they added support for the optimization and all that fun stuff. So they're learning from Java, actually, and that's pretty cool.
So when we talk about all these learning experience, George, how can developers leverage the Adopt OpenJDK project or Eclipse adoption now moving forward to engage with OpenJDK project in a more experimental way? You know, I just want to try things.
Well, I think the main thing to say about that is obviously, rather than going off as an individual company or developer and trying to hack away at a single thing on their own, benefit from the fact that we've got all of these JVM companies together working in a single place, and let's use that as a way of collaborating. Let's not rewrite the wheel 10 times. If we've got a build script that works to build OpenJDK on any platform, let's use it. If we've got a build farm that's capable of putting PR testing through on any platform, let's use that. We have access to so much hardware that, you know, even about a year ago, we would have dreamt of having. You know, we have early access Mac stuff. We have access to a load of Windows on ARM, and even like IBM mainframes and stuff. So if we can benefit from that, I think that helps. And just take advantage of the code that's there and try and bring it in-house, and learn from the open source method and contribute everything we do internally back out to the community and let others benefit from it.
Awesome. All right. So we are at the top of the hour. I would like to thank all of you to participate in this AMA. For folks who are watching, check all these Twitter accounts that you see here. Just follow them. Charlie on his stack allocation expertise and JIT compilers. And Charlie, you know way more than just that. I'm just giving an examples. Monica, she's a GC expert, and she's doing all this ARM development as well. Bernard, you are the best C++ developer I've known of in recent years, I guess.
I don't know any C++, so it's amazing.
Oh, you are. Only... Bernard, yes.
I can only debug it.
Hey, if you can...
Just 99% of the job when you're working C++.
I would like to thank George as well for his amazing work with Adopt OpenJDK and here at Microsoft helping us build binaries that we are testing internally. That's where our contributions to OpenJDK are validated. We have to build and test, right? So thanks for your support on that. And Kirk, thank you for your support with this conference. It could not have been any better without you. And Martin, your support and the support of the LJC as well along these years, you are an amazing person. So all of you, thank you so much for making this event a reality here at Microsoft. And to all the speakers, I just want to put here on my screen. So let's see if we can pull my screen here. So all the speakers that presented at JDConf, you go to this website and you're gonna find everyone who presented. Thank you all so much for an amazing collaboration effort, all these companies, all these partners, all these friends in the Java community that we've made throughout the years. Thank you so much. So with that, I'd like to close and just saying, this is the first JDConf. It will not be the last. We're gonna be back next year. When? We don't know. Virtually? Possibly, but hopefully not. So thank you so much, everyone, and have a great week.
Thank you, Bruno.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bruno.
This is a great conference. Thank you. Thank you, Kirk.
All right. Bye, all.
Yeah. Bye, all.